Welcome back to Sports Byline USA, coast to coast, border to border, and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. Always a pleasure to welcome the veteran broadcaster, Jim Lampley. And he's been very busy these last few months and years with PPV.com. And they returned to the ring over there at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn this Saturday, March 1st, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. It's going to be a world title tilt between Gervonta Davis and Lamont Roach Jr. Jim, welcome back to the show once again. And you hardly get a rest these days. Have you ever in your career, like, just taken, I don't know, a sabbatical or something?
Oh, sure. I had, after HBO came to its end, its functional end, after having been purchased by AT&T in 2018, and I did the last HBO boxing telecast December 8, 2018. For the next few years, I had a sabbatical. I didn't want it, but I didn't have much or a lot of work to do during 2019, 2020, 2021. That's when I went to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, the place of my college alma mater, and began teaching a course in media storytelling. And you know, that was a way of getting away from all of the years of rat race travel and attempted upward mobility in sports broadcasting. and then, you know, I had been sitting still in Chapel Hill teaching, enjoying myself for a few years before PPV.com came along, and PPV.com became a pathway back to the ring and back to boxing, and that stimulated the writing of my autobiography, which publishes on April 15, and some other ancillary boxing involvements, etc. So I did have a little hiatus period for a few years there, and I didn't love it, and now I'm back.
Yeah, last time you were on, we talked about that book, and it's entitled It Happened, A Uniquely Lucky Life in Sports Television. And yes, we need luck, but once you get that luck, if you don't have the talent and you don't have the fortitude to work hard, you can't take advantage of it. So obviously you did and do have that talent. What's it like when you have a book and yet, you know, you're waiting on a six-month debut? Do you get kind of impatient, or is that just kind of the way they build it up?
Well, I would say it's a mixture of impatience and fear, because you write a book, and particularly an autobiography, you're writing about yourself. So to a certain degree, your ego and self-image are on the line. And now you get, to sit around through a period of months wondering, okay, is anybody going to actually buy the thing? Are people still interested in my story, which functionally came to an end, by the way, December 8, 2018. And I'm pleased to say that the initial response to the book and the feedback that I'm getting both from the publishing community and from other media like you, et cetera, suggest to me that this will be a popular book. I got very, very lucky in what you might call the marketing of the book, because without asking, as a windfall, I was given a foreword by Taylor Sheridan, the television drama writer who is one of the hottest figures in the culture right now. Mm-hmm. And my top blurb above Billie Jean King and Bob Costas and various others is from John Grisham, who's my neighbor in Chapel Hill. So I have the largest selling novelist in American culture and the hottest drama writer in American culture, both of them names on the cover promoting the book. And you know, the publisher is over the moon about that, as they should be, and I feel very lucky with regard to that. And it's a logical continuation of what you quoted as the subtitle of the book, my uniquely lucky life in sports television.
Great stuff. I was lucky to have John on the show a few years ago. And
Grisham?
Yeah, very impressed with him. How could I not be? One more thing before we get to the boxing. Last time we talked, I was talking about going through the Carolinas in December and just discovering all these great battlefields of the Revolutionary and Civil War, and you told me that you grew up not too far from Kings Mountain. There was this one place, I was just driving by these signs, and I couldn't take it anymore. This was in Dunn, North Carolina. It was a Veresboro battlefield, and I never heard of it, but I just had to go check it out as a history buff from California, where we don't have these things. Does that, I mean, how much did just, we never really got into Kings Mountain, but like, how much does that resonate you just as a patriot and just knowing that all that stuff went down right on that soil?
It's in my life so frequently because of one small idiosyncrasy, and that is that, you know, I'm an undergraduate and a graduate school student, product of the University of North Carolina, and throughout my life, people have asked over and over, where does the phrase Tar Heels come from? Why are North Carolinians called Tar Heels? And one of the legends that attaches to that is that a British general during the Revolutionary War turned to a compatriot and said, those North Carolina regiments stick to the ground as though there is tar on their heels. Now, there's another version that updates it to a Civil War derivation. But in both instances, you are led to believe that the phrase Tar Heels comes from either the Revolutionary War or the Civil War. And I've explained that so many times in my life that I do, you know, in a very disconnected way, feel attached to those two war experiences. And yes, I grew up pretty close to Kings Mountain, and I now live not too terribly far from Hillsboro, where the initial negotiations for the Civil War treaty took place.
Very cool. All right. As I mentioned, PPV.com, which does not require a subscription, this Saturday in Brooklyn. And the main event is going to be a title tilt between Gervonta Davis, and he is the Tank, the WBA light heavyweight champion. And then Lamont Roach Jr. is the WBA super featherweight champion. Whenever you get a lightweight and a featherweight coming together, I mean, I think it's just in our minds, we always think, oh, the guy who's heavier has the advantage. But, of course, maybe the guy who's lighter has more speed. How do you see the matchup?
Thank you. Well, Tank Davis is the arguably the premier power puncher in the sport. At 135 pounds, Tank Davis has 28 knockouts in 30 fights.
Wow.
That's a 94% knockout percentage, which is the highest in the sport. The anomaly is that he achieves that while throwing 28 punches per round. That's the lowest punch output of any major fighter in the sport. So he is going into the ring, operating very precisely at a measured pace, gathering information on the opponent, and then at some point in the fight, he explodes into a paroxysm of violence and puts the guy away 28 times in 30 fights. It's amazing to watch. The level of violence in his knockouts is reminiscent of early Tyson, but of course, Tyson was throwing a lot of punches to get that done. Tank Davis looks and looks and waits and waits, behaves like a counterpuncher, and then throws two or three punches, and you're flat on your back. And everybody expects, or at least everybody outside of Lamont Roach's camp expects, that that's what we're going to see Saturday night. Roach fought him twice in the amateurs. Davis won both of those fights. There's no reason to believe that Lamont Roach, a highly competent, skilled boxer, can beat Tank Davis here Saturday night.
Very interesting. And I know that you guys at PPV.com have the viewer chat. You're going to be on once again with Lance Pugmire, Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri once again. And, of course, that's just bringing the sport into the new century, that people can have that sort of interaction and feel a part of it. What was it like for you when you first heard, oh, yeah, you're going to be doing the fight, you're going to be on the chat line as well, and then how have you sort of acclimated to all that?
As a guy who taught a course in evolution of storytelling in American electronic news media at the University of North Carolina, I was thrilled to be invited to be part of a new form of communication, a new medium, a new way of telling this story. And it's kind of utterly natural at this point, given that I spent five semesters talking about this kind of thing to students at UNC, that I would be a part of something that is a new innovation, a new way of telling the story. The fact that viewers get to interact with us and offer their own opinions. Jim, you're dead wrong about that. You know, whatever they want to say is a really fun and advanced part of what we're doing. So I'm very, very happy and proud to be a part of PPB.com. Oh, and by the way, I get to sit at ringside again and I get paid. So it's all good.
Last question for you. I was just looking at the undercard and Valenzuela Russell and Puello, and I see Sandor Martin from Spain. I haven't thought of or heard of a Spanish boxer in quite some time. That's interesting.
I haven't seen a Spanish boxer in a while either. But, of course, boxing is global. Boxing is from all over the world. In the middle of my career, who would have thought that a 122-pound Filipino fighter would eventually emerge as the number one attraction in the world and fight against Floyd Mayweather for global supremacy pound for pound. You know, I've seen this over and over in boxing. It's the most broadly cross-cultural global sport and part of what I love about it.
Everybody, make sure to check out PPV.com. No subscription required. This Saturday, the main event, check it out, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 Pacific. It's going to be Tank Davis versus Lamont Roach. And remember, coming out in April, it will be It Happened, A Uniquely Lucky Life in Sports Television. From our guest, Jim Lampley. Jim, always great picking your mind on all sorts of topics. We really appreciate it.
My privilege. Good questions. Great to talk to you. And I'll see you down the road.
All right, good stuff. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break and come on back on Sports Byline.